This is amazing.
I'm a fan.
So, I don't know the veracity of this. Desmond is in my guild, and he says, Blizzard is allowing it, but they're mad about it. They can't, won't disqualify, which is what I would abuse if I get back on the MDI.
I wonder why they're mad about it.
This is a whole new way of abusing plague borers.
Yeah, but like, I won't call anybody out and say like, hey, Blizzard's mad about it. But I'd be like, my point on the podcast is probably gonna be like, if I was Blizzard, I'd think this is super cool.
Like, this is super cool, but also plague borers were a mistake.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. It doesn't hurt, and like, it's so weird. Like, it doesn't hurt anything. It doesn't change the way you do the dungeon. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can.
I mean, it definitely does change the way you do the dungeon.
Sorry, what I meant is like, it doesn't. It doesn't, like, you don't have to do this to complete the dungeon, right? Like, it's only going to affect the edge, like the edge cases. So like, what's the problem? Right. I guess that's my point, is like, what's the problem with the edge cases being edge cases, right?
So. Yeah, like, I think this is super neat. And hi, for anybody watching, we are definitely talking about Echo's plague borer strategy right now.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I forgot.
I haven't even done the intro yet. but holy shit, this is probably, like, we've seen the evolution of plague borer strats over the course of this tier. Where it started out being like, you know, people would use the plague borers against the packs that were next to the plague borers. And then that evolved into, okay, well, now you pull the entire dungeon kind of around the plague borers and you skip the mini boss so that you get a continuous spawn of plague borers and you just drag them into things as far as is practical. And then we saw the strat where they, what's it called? Cyclone? The plague borer, so that it doesn't die to its own explosion, and they just take that one plague borer and they just use it to kill everything.
Yeah.
And now we're seeing, so this is the triumphant return of snapping. Snapping has not really been a thing in Shadowlands keys, as far as I know. Like, I haven't really seen it in any of the push strats that we saw this weekend until now. This is ridiculous.
It's amazing.
I have now a stream pulled up right now, and they are just killing the final boss with plague, or the final second boss, because they skipped it. They're killing the second boss with plague borers. It's what a game, man. This is amazing.
I just wonder. Yeah, I don't know. Like, because they're not going to two chest it. It's still going to be a fast, you know, time, but I'm wondering if they could go faster, I guess would be the question. Right.
Yeah. I mean, so the thing about this is that when they try and do, like, I think from a meta perspective, what they need to do is not waste a key. Like, if they get three quarters of a way through a key and then die, that's really bad for them right now.
Right.
But if they can do, since all of their damage is from the plague borers, you know, right now they are at about 35 minutes into this key. If, I mean, the plague borers scale at the same rate as everything else, so their 28 will be a 35-minute plague fall, too.
That's true. Yeah, the damage by those things does sort of scale with the key level, which means, yeah. I mean, they basically just have to continue to make up the difference as they move up, right? Like, to keep it consistent.
Yeah.
See, they're not going to lose minutes every time they go up a key level. They'll lose, like, you know, 20, 30, like, you know, maybe, yeah, 20 seconds or so, 30 seconds or so.
Right.
Yeah, that's it'll be, I mean, it's an interesting way to look at, like, I now know why people are waiting on Plaguefall the entire time, and this is a really cool strat. So I hope Blizzard doesn't. I hope Blizzard doesn't nerf it, because like,
I mean, Blizzard is affects, totally nerfing that. Like, they're gonna do something so like Plagueborn's not dude. Putting the entire group in combat is probably the easiest thing they can do.
Well, just don't give the, yeah, don't give the Plaguebores global combat, and you basically yeah,
and
fix
then that
everything.
Fixes the snapping thing, but it leaves the other Plaguebore strats intact. And if they want to fix the Plaguebores soloing the dungeon kind of thing, then they can remove the infinite spawn from the mini boss and just be like, you know, he summons like 10 total or whatever, and you get those 10 to use, which sounds toxic to me, because that means that if you ever screw one up, that's it, your keys.
What's even more, it's even more like they should literally just remove their ability to do damage to other mobs.
I don't think this dungeon is doable without plague borers, honestly. The trash in there,
well, I mean, like, it's too, like, so it's doable on a 15.
Yeah, okay, yeah, it's doable on
a 15. So, like, it's, well, it would have to be, yeah, it would have to be doable on a 20 in 9-1. So as long as it's doable on a 20 in 9-1 without the use of them, like, I don't think, like, if Blizzard really cares as much as they do about this, like, just take out the damage. I mean, it's stupid in general, but whatever. Blizzard does dumbass things, so.
All right. Sorry. Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 70 of the Pico Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we stand the Plague Borers, because holy shit, it is Plaguefall Day in the Great Push, and Echo is showing the world how it is done. I'm not going to be mad if you go and you pull up Now stream or the Warcraft stream instead of watching us, because that is some impressive bullshit that they are pulling off.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it looks it's amazing. I love it.
But speaking of the Great Push, that's so today is day 3 of that. Is it or is it day 2?
It's day 3.
Day 3. Yeah. What do you think?
I love it. So it's funny. I was talking to some of my friends about it on Friday. So day 1 was Friday, day 2 was Saturday yesterday, and I'm recording this Sunday. So it's the final day. And nobody liked it day 1. Day 1 was boring. It was like just people doing keys. It was sort of whatever. And I made the comment that it's very much like Mythic for World First, the World First race for like Mythic raids, where like literally up until Friday, even Saturday the first week, nothing matters. Because you know, guilds are going
they're
through their
bosses 1 through 8 and not on 9 and 10 yet.
Exactly. There's no drama. It's not exciting. But I was like, you hit day 2 was a little interesting. There were some interesting things. It was like, all right, when are we gonna see this plague fall? Like, when are we gonna get that going? Yeah. And then now today is like the final day, which I think is really cool. So I think it's a really cool format. I think so. Here's where I think I like it. So as a person who played, let me collect my thoughts. But as a person who plays World of Warcraft, I enjoy it because I understand what's going on. Like I understand the concepts. I can see it. They have like the three or four viewpoints normally always going on from the different teams that are running it. Really cool to see where teams are.
And individuals as well are streaming with comms. So like I had Now stream up because I wanted the tank POV. Mm-hmm. But like Fragments had his stream up when he was doing the Plague Borer stuff just, you know, 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So you can totally go and watch people, like if you just want to see like, okay, I want to hear their comms, I want to see what's going on. But then the commentary is actually, I think, a lot better for this than for the MDI, because the MDI is, I don't know, it seems a lot more one-dimensional than this has been.
Yeah, there's like not a lot going on. And I think the other problem is there's only two teams to watch. And generally, there's only one team to watch in MDI, right? Like, even though two teams are racing each other, it's up until like the first mistake. And then they focus on the team that's in the lead, right? So, yeah, no, I think there's a lot of more to discuss from a strategy perspective. And I think it's cool if you sort of are into World of Warcraft. If you know nothing about World of Warcraft, this is the most confusing thing you will ever watch. Like, there's just... The idea is like you don't really like. There's so much going on because like so. And I, the reason I say this is my dad came over yesterday and had this on the TV and I was like, he's like, what's going on? I was like, well, I was like, there's like you know a bunch of teams are trying to do these dungeons as high as they can. They get points if they do it the highest. And like, he's like, I have no freaking clue what like I don't. He's like, so they're racing. I was like, yeah, it's like six teams and like it took me literally like 30 minutes
it's
before
more
I got
like. It's really more like golf in that like. In golf, you're not racing, although golf, you're usually not doing it simultaneous either.
Yeah.
But you're going, you know, hole by hole in a tournament setting, at least as far as I don't watch that much golf.
Yeah.
And you're competing to get it in the lowest number of hits.
Right.
So that's really what they're doing here, except instead of lowest number of hits, it's highest key level.
Right. No, and I think that would probably be a better way to explain it to my dad, because he does golf. But I think in terms of like the spectator aspect of this, it's very difficult if you don't have even like
a cursory some understanding
level
of
yeah, video some games. Level of WoW, like of World of Warcraft, right? Or, you know, I think you actually probably need more experience with World of Warcraft than games in general to even understand this. Like, because it's just so, I don't know, it's a little bit tougher to watch than like, hey, there's two teams, fastest team wins, they're going through this dungeon. Like,
but at the same time, as someone that does play World of Warcraft, I have actually liked this a lot better.
Yeah,
because this is actually, so despite the fact that they're doing, you know, 25, 26 keys.
Yeah.
This is closer to the kind of keys that I do and the kind of experiences that I have than MDI is.
Oh, yeah.
Because yeah, MDI, sure. Like, people talk about MDI pulls, right? Like, you pull 8 packs together, you kite them around onto the boss, you AoE the shit out of them.
Yeah. And,
like, nobody in, like, doing their weekly 15s is going to do that. No. But you know what they will do? Miss time a defensive on Gorchop and die.
Yeah.
Which happened yesterday to now while I was watching. He missed time with Demon Spikes for a whatever hateful strike that Gorchop has and just whoomp. All of his jets were down. He just died. And he didn't have a B-res anymore. But I think to your point as well about the MDI being like, as soon as there's a mistake, you kind of know who's going to win. Like, it's the other team's game to lose at that point. This has been more interesting as well, because even when there is a mistake, like in that Theater of Pain run, where now ultimately was the one that died the last time, they had multiple deaths before that. They might have even had the team wipe, I think.
I think in the theater, it was close. I don't know if it was a full team wipe, but yeah, they lost the majority of the folks.
Yeah. And the key was still live. They were still going, right?
Yeah.
So the way the scoring works is it's actually based on the key level that you complete. The timer, and it actually doesn't matter as long as you complete it in time.
Right.
Except, so the way the tiebreakers work is if two teams are tied for number of points, the team with the higher key level on any dungeon wins.
Wins that first one.
Yeah. If they have the same key level on, or the same highest key level, then they go by the fastest time. So it's like this tertiary tiebreaking thing that time matters. And that means that, you know, there's not a like, oh, well, one team has thrown this dungeon, I guess I can stop watching and wait for the next one.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been, there's also been some interesting like strategy around, like they were talking about, and some of the teams did this, was like some teams two chested their 24s, but then didn't go directly to the 26. They did the 25 in the interim because they didn't know if they could, I guess, complete the 26 on time regardless. And so it's better to get like the points secured and then sort of then go and try the harder keys. So
and they do have a time limit on this, right? They can't just like be doing this 24/7 for 3 days.
Yeah, it's like 5 hours each day, which is cool.
So
which
there
is
was actually nice some interesting stuff around the end of day yesterday, where the way the time limit works is there's a time limit on when you can start a key, but they won't like kick you out of the dungeon if you're partway into a key. So when there was like 15 minutes left on the timer for when they could start a key, we saw a bunch of teams that were like trying to get into their, or I guess teams, I think Echo was working on Sanguine Depths, and they just like reset that dungeon like 5 times trying to do this very difficult first pull perfectly to set them up for the rest of the dungeon.
Yeah.
And because they knew like they weren't going to be able to wait 15 minutes and get partway through the dungeon and then lose it there, like they had to make the call.
Like immediately.
And then they did end up getting that Sanguine Depths after resetting it like 5 times.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, it's been a really cool format. It's been really interesting. I think it I think as a format, I think it's really cool. I think the idea that you can't really replicate this on live very easily is also another really interesting thing, because like at that point there's no like you can't you can kind of practice for like this in terms of like maybe some pulls, but I think until you see it with like the damage you need and like the damage like that you're going to intake, right, too, I think it's much more difficult to like
image intake is ridiculous.
Yeah, to like basically practice this on live and then go into the MDI or go into whatever the competition is, the great push, right? And replicate it there. So I think that's really cool too. It sort of lessens the outside time commitment that some of these teams may have.
I do think as well, it's very interesting. So again, I was watching Now's perspective and they were going into Sanguine Depths and they were trying to do like a 26 and I ended up doing a 25, I believe. Mm-hmm. But he was trying the 26 on his Demon Hunter and then they went into the 25 on his bear because he got pissed off at dying through meta to something deep in the dungeon. And his whole, like everything he was saying throughout the whole 25 run was, holy shit, bear is dumb. And at the end, he was like, we should have done the 26 on my bear.
Yeah.
Bear is really good right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, I mean, most of the teams are running with, you know, bear tanks right now. So,
yeah. There's even a team called Does the Bear Stream.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, it's like Yoda and those guys. No, it's no, but it's, I mean, I think in general, the format's really cool. I think it's been awesome to watch. And much more like, you're right, it's much more like live keys. And I think it's right. Sort of the same feeling I get from watching the World First race in that, like, I feel like I don't know if I could do a 26 to 27, but like, right. I feel like if I could replicate what they do in terms of strats, like I could pull like a 20 or, you know, a 21, something like that, right? Like, I think there's an idea of like, you watch them do this and like, you've done these dungeons and you're like, yeah, no, these guys are ridiculous, right? Which is similar to like the feeling I get watching the World First race from a raid perspective. Yeah. Same thing I get like watching people play like other games like Dota or Counter-Strike, like other competitive games where like I've played that same map or that same hero and like I don't do that. Like I know like why they're doing it. I understand the concept behind it, but it's like I can't do that. So I think this is super cool. So
yeah, I think actually that's a great analogy to like League, because when I watch Pro League or whatever,
yeah,
or Dota, you know, I'm not on their level, not even close, but I can run the same comps. And I can look at the things that they do and go, holy shit, that was like a great Leona ult that like just sniped them.
You know?
That's something I could work on. That's something I could do. Maybe I can't do everything that they do, but I could do that thing.
Right. Yeah. Like work on like either individual parts of it or take what they're doing and pull it into like what you do, which I think is what makes this cool. Cause like from an MDI perspective, like I'm never in a position where I'm like, yeah, I really want to do this key in 12 minutes.
Yeah,
that's my goal. Like, it's like I don't,
and I'm never even in a position where like I could feasibly set that up. Let's be honest.
Yeah,
but you know, a lot of the some of the strats they're doing are like very specific to high keys. Some of the strats they're doing are things that are just like, here's how you pull the dungeon and get it under time. You know, and the strat is applicable on a 15 as much as on the 25.
Yeah.
Maybe with slightly more invis pots.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, so no, it's been a cool competition. It's been a cool format. I hope they keep it up. I mean, I think like making this like a MDI. What?
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it doesn't become like the whole Blizzard way of doing something where it's like, all right, now we're gonna have like weekly competitions or like monthly ones. Like I think like once a quarter or like once or twice a patch cycle makes, well, not their patch cycle is a little longer, maybe a little bit more than once or twice, but the idea is like make this like a one-off like special event every two and a half months, right? And pull people back in. So I think if they turn into like, here's season one of the Great Push and season two of the Great, like it's too much. Like I actually think
this could be better than doing the weekly MDI things, because this feels like something they could say, okay, every, you know, 2 or 4 weeks or whatever, we're going to have a weekend or even just a Saturday. And, you know, we're going to do the Plaguefall Saturday, and then we're going to do the Halls of Atonement Saturday, and then we're going to do the Necrotic Wake Saturday. And like, that's, I think, more compelling, at least to me, based on what I've seen from the Great Push, than the MDI one is. Because again, like the MDI one, I eventually realized that I just don't care. Like nothing that they're doing is in any way relevant to the keys of
life. Well, then like the MDI got to the point where like literally there was two teams, right? Like, or, yeah, like I maybe mean, three, but like in terms of like just skill and way. And like here you get to see some new people. And I mean, to be fair, Echo's at the top again, right? Like those guys are just ridiculous. So but
Skyline giving them a run for their money.
I don't know. Skylines look real good. I mean, even Ambition to a point has looked good. So I think in this case, there's like a lot more people that enjoy this aspect of it because it's, I think it's less of a time investment at the end of the day, which is like the big thing with MDI. So
one thing they could do with this as well is they could do a start of season and end of season great push, or like start of season, mid season, end push. Because I mean, kind of as an analogy, Magic has tournaments periodically. They actually have quite a few tournaments. And one of the things that they had done previously that I liked was they had one when a new set released. And I had one, you know, several months later after the set release, but a couple months maybe before the next set.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you got to see, you know, what's the original decks and strategies that people employ and how do those evolve over a couple months. And sometimes there's no change. Sometimes people solve the format in
like immediately, yeah.
And then sometimes it looks totally different because someone found something, you know, that is completely insane that just breaks the meta.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's actually sorry, I don't want to go on another tangent because that brings up something interesting. But yeah, no, that's I think they could do a lot with this. I think it's been a lot of fun. I wonder what Blizzard does when they see things like the Plaguefall, Plague Borers, and things like that. That's the stuff that
they've got to be paying attention to.
It bothers me that like they're gonna nerf it or they're gonna change it because I think it's an interesting way to use what they put in the game, like the interesting use of game mechanics, which was always a meme, right? But like, I think it's actually something that has always, to me, made WoW a like fun to watch or fun to sort of get into. And like, people find these like little things that like they don't affect everybody. They like affect a very small subset of the population. And like, it's like you don't need to. I'm not even gonna say exploit it.
So the Plague Borers. Speaking of that are actually in Plaguefall, that when you're not trying to do the cheese stuff, it's actually kind of nice because you can use them to very efficiently clear out some very nasty trash in between the first boss and the second boss. And I like that. It actually makes that area of the dungeon, which otherwise, like without using the Plague Borers early on in the expansion, was miserable. That trash sucks.
Yeah.
But when you can just like Plague Borer and it just blows it up or does three quarters of the work for you, it's a lot more palatable, and I actually kind of like that dungeon, except for the last boss.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's the thing that always gets me whenever we see stuff like this is Blizzard gets angry.
Okay, hang on. Lincoln, are you serious? Someone is playing Brewmaster in the Great Push. Hang on. I got to pull this up.
Are they? I don't think so.
There's no way. I cannot imagine a situation where someone plays Brewmaster
over bear.
Like, why would you ever do that?
I don't see any on screen right now.
Okay, I don't see any either. I think Lincoln's trolling me. Andy. Okay, Andy Brew. I can imagine playing Brewmaster. It's in the name. Kind of makes sense.
Interesting. Yeah. So no, but it's been. I think it's been a fun.
We'll be monitoring the situation.
Yeah. It's been a fun tournament to watch. Fun tournament to get into. I wonder again, like the whole WoW. I think the idea of WoW esports being interesting to people outside of WoW is just not. It's like a misnomer, right? Like I don't think they can make something interesting to people who don't at least have a cursory understanding of the game, right? I think it's a little too niche in that regard. But
yeah, I don't know that it needs to be.
Neither do I. I think this format's cool. There's enough people that watch it, so
I think. So again, referring to Magic, they had a great, like, thriving professional scene and competitive scene with lots of tournaments and lots of prize support. More so even than WoW's prize support, which is kind of anemic in comparison to most games, and they kind of killed it by trying to pursue making it like accessible to everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, there is a Brewmaster. There is a Brewmaster. Andy Brew is on his Brewmaster playing for Sheesh. Oh my God.
Awesome. Awesome.
But I'm not going to have this up during the podcast, but I am going to check it later. And someone poke me if they do disgusting things with Angry Dave.
Awesome. But yeah, so I think that you're right. I don't think it has to be some sort of like mainstream esport thing. So, which is why I hope they don't sort of change anything about it, the format, right? I think it's cool. I think they leave it in there. They don't make it a weekly thing. They make it maybe like once, like to your point, once or twice a season, maybe early on to see like what people do early on, what they think is possible. And then later on, you know, sort of like a mid or end of season thing following the seasonal affects, I think would be cool. Yeah. So
one more thing about it being kind of accessible to a broader audience, League of Legends and Dota were not originally accessible to a broader audience either. They are actually very like deep and complex games that they're not very easy to see what's going on if you don't know the format. But
yeah, after
half a decade of MOBA games existing and like a huge number of players having played MOBAs, now they are considered reasonably accessible. And some of that is because of improvements on the casting front, where like they had, I don't know if they still do this, but they had the noob stream and then like original traditional stream, where the noob stream was like, here's the commentary to explain the game to new people, and here's the, and then the other one was explaining the game to experience, or like casting for experienced players.
Right. Yeah.
But also just like, if it becomes a bigger thing, people will teach other people how to understand it.
Yeah. No, I think that's, yeah, I don't know. I think maybe, I think the problem is the basic concept of Dota and League is pretty simple. Right, it's like two teams of five players and you're trying to kill the big building at the end.
Yeah,
right, and like everybody controls one player. Yeah, so I think like from a concept perspective, yeah, like the heroes do certain things, they do crazy things, and that sort of is where the deep, you know, even items come into play, right? All that sort of stuff adds to the mastery, like the
right
sort of the nuance of the game and the deep understanding of it, right? But I think at a basic level, a lot of those are just easy to understand from like a general concept perspective. Like it's two teams. Counter-Strike is very similar, even easier to understand, even though there is a lot of like, yeah, like economy and other stuff like that sort of happens in games like that. So like Valorant now is very similar. So yeah, I don't know, we'll see. I mean, hopefully it just becomes a thing they do and not something they try and push, right? Like it's like, hey, once a season, twice a season, we do this cool, great push thing. Be awesome. Hopefully it's just not a weekly thing, because I think that kills it. So, but in any event, moving on, because I think we've been here a little bit longer than we wanted to. Speaking of killing things, not really, but BlizzCon, the Blizzard released an update this week. BlizzCon is of course not going to be in person again this year.
I think so. That's a smart move.
Yeah, I mean, speaking, so from what I know about, you know, personally in my job setting up events, so I used to do a yearly event for my team, at Black Hat, actually. It was fun. In Las Vegas, it takes a very long time to plan things. Like we would start literally 8 months before, getting everything ready, doing all the logistics. And I had a team of maybe, you know, 20, 30 people that I was planning this for. So it's small. That's not a tens of thousands of people. I don't know how big BlizzCon is, but let's say tens of thousands of people. So basically they would have probably already been well into planning at this point for this year coming up. And I think with the uncertainty of venues and events and things like that, I think it's better that they spend the time to basically plan it as an online event moving forward. So yeah, BlizzCon this year going to be online again.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, to your point, good thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah. And even setting aside, like, people are worried about variants and things like that, but honest, like, BlizzCon is an international event, always has been.
Yeah.
And large parts of the world do not have the levels of vaccine access that the United States has.
Yep.
So,
yeah,
it makes sense.
Yeah. So, no BlizzCon, at least in person. They did say they're going to do something online again, which we'll see.
Yep.
To be fair, I haven't been to BlizzCon, so whether it's online or in person, it's literally the exact same thing for me. I sit in my house and watch the videos.
I had been planning to go to BlizzCon to see a bunch of friends last year.
Gotcha.
It's no longer, yeah, last year. That obviously didn't happen. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be happening this year. So fingers crossed for next.
Yeah, we'll see. I hopefully, yeah, in 20, that would be what, 2022. Hopefully they do it. So, all right. Now, other in news, and this, I don't know if this falls under like beta stuff or sorry, PTR stuff or not, but they did, there was a bunch of data mining that went on with some of the new Mythic Plus, or the new Mythic Plus affix for next year, or for next season, sorry. Essentially, So they data mined a bunch of stuff around. This is going to be a affix related to anima powers, and something with anima powers and how it works. But they did data mine basically two anima powers that are very similar or named similar to current affixes, right? So they had one that was around the Anthem of Necrotic Wounding, which basically did like physical damage to your target and reduces their healing absorption effects, very much like Necrotic, only it was an anima power. Right. They also had a different one that was, I think, like exploding, or sorry, no, volcanic. Yeah. So there's no real understanding of like how you're going to get these anima powers, but it seems like you probably get an anima power similar to the weekly affix that is there.
I imagine sort of it's going to be kind of like what they did for the Terra Gru, where there's going to be mobs around, maybe new mobs, hopefully just existing mobs with anima powers on them, kind of like in Torghast, where random mobs can have anima powers on them, that drop an anima power and everybody gets to pick one. And then maybe from week to week, you know, which exact mobs have the anima powers rotates.
Mm-hmm.
And that might affect your route, or maybe it won't.
Yeah, I'm wondering if they...
how good they are.
Yeah, either that or if they do something like the with the Awakening affix, the last one in BFA.
Yeah.
Where it's like specific mobs have the powers on them, but they're sort of tucked out of the way in dungeons. So you have to sort of go out and kill them to get the power, and then it's usable. Because I think if it's on random mobs in the dungeon, the anima powers would almost have to have like a timer on them. I mean, they only last a certain amount of time. Because then once you kill two of them and pick both powers for that week, like there's...
I mean, that's assuming there's only going to be two powers. And then there's also things like there can be ranks of powers. And so you might... by getting, like, let's say the volcanic one, what if you went through and you got four copies of that, right?
That's true. So maybe it's a little bit more like actual, like, yeah, Torghast is designed. Yeah, we'll see. But I think it'll be interesting. It'll be new. I don't know if I particularly enjoy it, but
yeah, my main concern is just around the variance of it. Like, if it's I'm assuming these things are going to be powerful or nobody's going to care about them, right?
Right, yeah.
And because they're powerful, that means that if the power delta between the worst option and the best option is really high, it's going to be feel really bad if you just like don't get good powers in your run. Kind of like it does in Torghast, except instead of it being Torghast, it's a Mythic Plus run and you bricked your 15 because you got shit powers week one.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
But on the other hand, if it's like a pool of four powers and then you get to pick three of them on every one and there's four total things throughout the dungeon, kind of like there is with Prideful, then, you know, the odds of you getting totally screwed out of like, even if there's only one good power with five people getting to pick three out of four times, you're going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see how the actual acquisition of it works. I think you're right. How it's acquired is going to be potentially the sticking point, or like the point about if this is good or not. So but I think it'll be interesting. The powers will probably, I think if they can do some cool stuff with powers, it'll be fun to add stuff to the dungeons, right?
Yeah.
They seem to be very DPS focused. I think probably they should be, but it'll be fun to see. Maybe we get a little corrosive dosage, you know, maybe some class specific ones. No way.
Unlikely.
Yeah, no way.
Definitely not corrosive dosage. If they put corrosive dosage in, the meta comp for high keys is going to be five monks.
Yeah, of some capacity, yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't think any class has a singular anima power that is as busted as corrosive dosage.
Yeah, no, it's pretty
good. They have combinations that are, but a singular power, not on that level.
Yeah. No, yeah. So it'll be fun. It'll be interesting to see how this one plays out, in terms of the actual like Mythic Plus, you know, how this affix works itself out. So, but it seems to be not as bad as like Beguiling was, or whatever. What was it?
Yeah.
Infested.
I mean, a lot of the issues with Beguiling. Okay. Infested is a whole other matter. Infested. We won't talk about Infested because we'll be here forever. Beguiling. A lot of Beguiling's problem was a combination of the mobs being extremely impactful, all downside, like just strictly downside. And then having really frustrating things like the spell reflect one being a little bit buggy sometimes, where it would like sometimes it would take like I would ring a piece it out, it would get bounced out, it would start walking back in, it would get bounced out again, and it would just like walk partway through the ring and it get bounced into us, and the entire group would explode.
Yeah.
because the spell reflect went off on everyone. But then, and then also magic auto attacks. That was fun.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so I think it's very unlikely they do that again.
Yeah. So, I mean, it'll be cool to see how these powers work. What's the negative downside of them, if there is one, right? Or if the negative
downside is probably that you have to warp your route around getting more than like a couple of them.
Yeah. Or the best part, what if it was this, is that we don't get these anima powers.
It gives them to the mobs.
Get these anima powers.
Oh, man.
On top of, actually, it wouldn't make sense because they're exactly like the affixes, but maybe like 1 week, certain mobs just have necrotic as their aff. Like you've got like bolstering and inspiring, and then in the middle of it is like the bosses get necrotic for whatever reason. So yeah, just be dumb. But yeah, so potentially new affixes. It'll be cool to see what this one plays out as. But I would imagine. Hopefully, it's just. I would hope the way they do it, and this is sort of how I would hope, like if I would look at it, is that the animal powers are like short duration buffs, and you have to kill certain mobs to gain the power, right? The power doesn't change. Like you always know you're going to get, if it's necrotic and whatever weak, you're always going to get the necrotic power and the volcanic power, right? The power sort of aligns to whatever weak it is, but you have to kill certain mobs to get those buffs, and those buffs are sort of short-lived. And I think that would be cool in terms of like...
So my issue with short-lived buffs is kind of the same issue that we've run into with Prideful, right? Where if you waste your Prideful buff, sometimes your Ki is just dead. Sometimes you're going to do Hikar and you have your Prideful and your Lust and you press both of them and then you wipe. And like, in theory, you can go and do other things and come back when Lust is back, but that Pride is extremely hard to get back on that boss.
Right. Yeah, and I think, I mean, to that point, like, I think that's just the nature of the game, right? Like, if you wipe, like, you should be punished for wiping, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It just
like that's the idea is like
to lose, like, to basically lose 10 minutes into the Ki.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you could always recover that, though. I mean, you push hard enough.
You've done Tyrannical Hikar.
I mean, I have. Like, you'll be okay.
And you know how bad that is. Trying to do that without Pride, like, you're basically at that point. Like, I know it's possible to do without Pride. People do it on high keys without Pride, but for pugs or just like random guildies in whatever comp is the four people that needed a Ki on Monday at midnight.
Yeah.
No.
So I get that. I think my point is that like there's. I'm fine if you lose a beneficial buff because you wipe. I am fine with that being the outcome, personally. And the reason I say that is, like, they put these buffs in there for you to go and get and then utilize. And if you screw it up, you shouldn't get a get out of jail free card, right? You shouldn't be able to say, like, hey, I get to start again with the same thing because I made a mistake. A
better example might be the weapons from Necrotic Wake, right? Where those are, like, hugely impactful, build your strat around them kind of things.
Yeah.
In the same way as Pride. But if you died, you lost them. And that sucked.
Right, but then here's the thing, Emerson. Don't die. Okay. And then you get to use them.
Sometimes people just don't get a kick. Like, okay, world first kind of teams are going to be getting the kicks. Of course.
But even if it's not world first, like, the idea is, like, you have like a set of things you need to do. Mean,
I'm sure you had this experience too, where like you were 25 minutes into your necrotic wake, someone doesn't kick a necrotic bolt and it kills you.
Yeah.
And then it kills three of your party members before they can get a battle res off.
Yeah.
And then just all of your weapons are gone and you can't kill a Marth now.
Well, the Ki's bricked potentially bricked, I think, at like, that point. Yeah, but yeah.
There are tyrannical keys where like you just can't kill a Marth without the weapons. You're using like a spear, a hammer, and you're doing like, you know, 20 or 30% of the boss's HP with those.
Mm-hmm.
And you're putting Pride into it too. Like, Pride lost multiple weapons just to kill the Marth.
Yeah, I guess my point, and it's regardless of the situation, is that like if you set up to do something and then you fail to do it, you shouldn't get like you shouldn't get a chance to reset.
I guess my issue is with how punishing it is on 15s, basically.
That's fair.
Pride on Hakkar feels mandatory on a 15 on Tyrannical with a puck. If Hakkar were easier to the point where we felt like we could just do it with Lust and just come back when Lust is back up, then sure, that's fine. That's not how Hakkar feels in Bucks. I know there's things like on Hakkar, there's this thing where you can like, if you break the shield right away, he doesn't actually do the whole shield.
Yeah.
So you get a lot more boss DPS like that. And so with coordinated groups, you can like shattering throw and just like put your CDs into the start of the shield. And that's not something my like Pug half guild group is doing. And this is something where like, I think you're correct at the point where you're setting up all this stuff, like at the great push level, even at the plus 20 level, like sure. But at the weekly key, do it for your box level, I think having it be basically breaking your key if you die is just not great gameplay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's more of a, that's a tuning issue. I can see that. I just don't.
To that point, I guess my point is I would be okay if anima powers go away if you die, for example, as long as it doesn't feel like you have to have them more in order to do the key on a 15. Like if you have to have them to do the key on a 20, like, okay, sure. But for my weekly vault, I don't have to do the key on a 20. I have to do it on a 15. That is literally like 70% easier.
Right, but we're down a rabbit hole. We should probably move on. But my only point to that, just real quick, is that like if they're giving you a something to complete the dungeon and you don't use it effectively, you should not be able to complete the dungeon. Right. Like
the same thing is all about degrees, right? Like if one person dies and your key is bricked, I think that's really bad. It's another thing entirely if like the entire group wipes and then your key is bricked, I'm more okay with that. But if a random person dies to a missed kick or something like that, you know, and then your key is dead, that feels really bad. I don't like that. It's something that I feel is a little bit more acceptable when you're doing keys that just at a base level require higher execution.
Right.
But doing the weekly 15s, I feel like losing a random person probably shouldn't break your key unless it's at like a really critical moment. Like if you're on the last boss and you lose your healer and you don't have a battle res because your healer was the battle res.
Yeah.
And that breaks your key. Like that feels bad, but also don't die on the boss.
Yeah.
The bosses are a little bit more tightly controlled environments kind of thing. But then like if a random DPS dies partway through your key and your key is bricked because they had the spear, that sucks.
Yeah. No, I see both sides of it. That's fair. So, oh man. All right. Well, I think that was it for this week. So the main topic, I don't really know if we talked about this, but I wanted to cover a couple of things just on this week's raid testing. There wasn't much on the PTR, so we'll cover a little bit of the PTR, so have a little bit on raid testing. And then I did want to get into, at least maybe briefly, how you feel about Burning Crusade, because Burning Crusade does launch this week. So yes. I wanted to talk a little bit just about our thoughts and feelings and stuff like that. So maybe we can get through these
We have a lore corner today that we do want to get to and a few questions. So we've got a packed episode, so let's get right into the raid testing stuff.
Yeah. So I guess PTR stuff first, changes-wise. No real changes. There was a couple of PvP adjustments, but...
And then some tooltip changes for Monk.
The
legendaries, but wording. They're not functional changes.
Yeah, it's great that Babs had to make an announcement in the Windwalker channel because apparently 100% more often is confusing when it originally says is doubled. It's the same.
I don't know why they worded it this way. Okay, the original wording was so much better.
Please, yeah, I don't understand.
Blizzard, Sigma, Eon, Lore, whoever I have to talk to, please just change it back. The new wording is bad.
It's the same thing. 100% more thing, of but something.
One of them is clearer than the other.
That's true.
Is clearer than the other. And this is a thing we run into all the time where like your damage is increased by 10%. Okay, what exactly does that mean? Like, or I guess an easier one is your haste is increased by 10%. What does that mean?
You have 10% more haste. So if you have like 50%
haste,
does that
mean that? So is it additive? Is it multiplicative? It's not clear. If it says adds 10% haste, then suddenly it's more clear.
That's fair. Yeah.
And the so more, this is not exactly the same thing, but kind of the same thing.
That's fair.
Also, just people are bad with numbers. People are bad with numbers. I know it's an RPG, but people are bad with numbers. And anytime you can get the number out of there and still have it be clear and exact, you should do it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, so that's sort of the PTR updates. Nothing real interesting from there. But raid testing, we actually, the only fight I wanted to talk about, we did, there was a bunch, I think there was what, 4 or 5 bosses that were tested this week.
Yeah.
A lot on Mythic. But the big one was Sylvanas. Heroic was testable, which...
Before we hit Sylvanas, I just want to say one thing about Painsmith, actually.
Okay.
That fight is really, really interesting. That fight needs better telegraphs.
That's fair.
It needs to be easier to figure out how things work. It needs to be easier to tell where things are going to hit. That's all I want to say about it. Like, I had someone say to me, it's a Final Fantasy fight, and they're exactly correct. It is a Final Fantasy fight, but it's got bad telegraphs, unlike Final Fantasy fights.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's true.
So give it better telegraphs, and it's a great fight. But that's okay, funny. Sylvanas.
Yeah, Sylvanas. So, yeah, so Sylvanas was testable for the first time, and it looked interesting. So I was watching...
That's a word for it.
I was watching from Jack's point of view for the most of it. I watched sort of the most of the testing from his point of view. And as a healer fight, I'm not exactly excited about this, particularly because the majority of phase two seems really boring, right? Like, it's very Jaina-esque in terms of its phase two, where there's like a traversal thing when then you try to get to the boss again. I think it's slightly different as there's like some mobs you got to kill as you move over there. Like, you still interact a little bit with her, but it seems like they almost took Jaina's like swirly ice things and just made them black and called them swirly wraith things. And then you have, you know, Sylvanas. So, I mean, it's, the phase one seems, you know, people were saying it's very melee unfriendly. I don't think it really is. I think it's just,
it actually isn't. People were getting confused. If you look at it, so this is, again, a case of Blizzard having bad telegraphs. Make your telegraphs better and the fights are better. They're not like, sometimes it's easier, but it's not easier in a way that matters. It's not easier in a way that's going to matter for Limit, right? Because Limit's going to have a weak aura that clearly telegraphs it. I wrote a weak aura in the middle of testing to tell people when Sylvanas, no, actually was not moving, even though she was teleporting all over the platform.
Right, yeah.
Like, make your telegraphs better, and people won't need as many weak auras.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, definitely not melee unfriendly. Ports around a lot though, like crazy. There's a lot of like in and out movement. There's some spear stuff. Seems kind of okay. Phase two, I don't think is going to be fun. Like, you run around a bunch of platforms, kill mobs at certain points, and then like platforms sort of raise and move. So very similar to, you know, Jaina, like I mentioned, it's sort of a traversal thing. And then you get to phase three. Phase three looks interesting, where it's like you're fighting her on individual platforms, and there's like other fights going on in the room, which, from a lore perspective, I like, but like, if you're fighting the boss, like, others, you don't notice other stuff happening around you. Like, you don't care that like the jailer is trying to attack with the eternal. Was it the eternal one? What's the main guy? Yeah,
the ancient one, the eternal the ancient, one.
Yeah, something like that. Like, you don't care about that. You don't care about there's a fight on the main platform between like Anduin and Jaina and Thrall and Bolvar, whatever's happening down there. So, I mean, I don't know, but it has platforms.
I do think it is cool to actually have that in there instead of it happen just off screen.
That's true.
Which is the alternative.
Yeah.
So
hopefully there's some interaction there. I didn't see, I mean, I watched, they only got to phase three at least. Jack and Imperative, I think is
his Imperative, yeah.
Only for a little bit, about like probably 15 minutes at the end.
And they got there kind of in a very interesting way, because combat drops and you can release and run to phase three after you complete phase two. It's very weird. I don't think that's intended. I think her HP was way, way overtuned on testing, which normally they do try and have it higher so that people don't just like come in and DPS through all the mechanics. But we were spending like 5 minutes in phase one. I mean, not literally 5 minutes, but you know, we would have a 5 minute wipe. And at the end of it, it would be like, you know, 4.5 minutes in, bosses at 82%, and she pushes to phase two at 80%.
Yeah.
And we had a scuffed group this week because of the time of the testing. like noon early, Pacific right? time was very awkward.
Yeah. Very early. So
we did not have a great group for it. But yeah, I mean, phase one, I think is actually fine. People are freaking out about it being anti-melee, but what they really need to freak out about being anti-melee is phase two from the little bit that I saw of it. But yeah. Phase one is going to completely define the tank meta right now. Like if it goes unchanged, it completely redefines the tank meta. Because of how her tank mechanic works. So basically she gets stacks of this thing. I don't remember what it's called, but at three stacks, she replaces an auto attack with this like rapid fire thing that does split shadow and physical damage. And she can gain more than three stacks. It's not instant. So like there are points where she's got, you know, six stacks, nine stacks, and can do it multiple times in a row. She also continues gaining stacks while other things are happening. So she might do one of the mechanics where she actually does teleport away. And then do the tech mechanic. And because it's ranged and you can't control positioning or anything like that, she will do her tank thing on the tank from a long distance away. And that means that, for example, Death Knights can't death strike in the middle of it. On top of them, then they can death strike in the middle of it and be fine. But if she's not in melee, they can't death strike. And like, I guess you hit IBF and hope for the best.
Yeah. Interesting.
I also ran into situations where I literally had shuffle expire while I was running out. I was doing the, which side note, please get like, don't give us literally half the raid with tank runs out to reduce damage on the raid mechanics. That's kind of not.
There's like five.
I would rather just have a tank debuff. Give me a taunt debuff, please.
It's the new Soak Garrus. It's the tank runs away with debuff, whatever. Danktum.
Yeah.
Sanctum.
And I had shuffle expire, and then she had two of the things queued up, and the first one hit my co-tank, and like they needed me to taunt, so I taunted. And I didn't have shuffle up. I hit Celestial Brew and hope for the best, and like that's not, that barely cut it on heroic, and that is not going to cut it on mythic.
Yeah, yeah, that's rough. Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do run for that, because you're right. Yeah, if she jumps away as she's doing that, so yeah.
So Hina is saying phase one is anti-melee to the nth degree. I don't understand why. Because she actually is stationary for 90% of phase one. She only teleports like once every 30 seconds, if that. She's actually staying in the same spot for the majority of the fight.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand why. She does the like visual teleporting, and if you're watching a stream, it can be very difficult to tell when she's actually staying in one spot. And that is, again, fix the telegraphs. This is actually one of my big frustrations with WoW for a long time. Like, there's so many weak auras that we have that literally just fix Blizzard's telegraphs. And if they just gave us better telegraphs baseline, we wouldn't need the weak auras.
Yeah.
But like, I put a weak aura together that just puts on your screen, Sylvanas stands still. While she's actually doing the teleporting thing, but staying in the same spot. Like, I don't think it's that bad. She does teleport around periodically, but, like, you can Flying Serpent Kick to every single one that she teleports. Like, when she teleports away, you can just FSK over to it, and it's, like, fine.
Gotcha.
So, I don't think phase one is that bad. Phase two, more problematic, but I didn't get to phase two. Again, scuffed comp. And from what I saw of it, though, this does seem more likely that that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how the rest of that fight goes. Cause yeah, phase two seemed very generic, even from a healing perspective, looking at it. Like, phase one was interesting. Some priority healing you want to do, some of the chains targets, right? And the tank debuff doing a large AoE damage, right, is always fun from like a CD perspective. But phase two looked honestly boring, dude. Like, it looked like the anti-Jaina phase two, where it's just like there's very little healing. You don't like, you maybe watch your feet a little bit, right? But like in general, it's just like you just want to sort of get through it slowly but surely. So Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I watched a little bit of Phase 3. Phase 3 seemed cool. I mean, there was platforms.
Actually, I haven't looked at Phase 3 yet, so.
Yeah, there's like four platforms around the center of that area, right? And you sort of fight, you fight Jayne on each one. I think there's it's timer-based where you have to do enough damage to her before the platform gets destroyed. And then you jump to the next one. And like, I think the idea is you like jump around, do enough damage to get her low enough, and then you fight her maybe in the center platform. Little shaky, because you go to the center platform earlier, Anduin just kills you. So I think you like kind of jump around and sort of chase her and do enough damage. So it should be fun. I mean, platforms at the end, I got some like just from a visual perspective, some Lei Shen vibes, but okay. I know that there's no like power poles. It's not gonna be a Lei Shen like fight, but it should be maybe interesting.
Could be on Mythic. You never know.
It could be. I mean, the platforms might do something interesting each one. That would be cool. God, reusing mechanics. I wonder if platforms ends up being... Platforms isn't the same as, like, dropping down holes, right? That's a different sort of... Because, like, if you change elevation, that's instantly a great fight. So, which in Jayne you do. I don't know if you realize you jump off the boat. So, instantly a great fight.
Jayne is not a great fight. Jayne is a broken fight.
No, but it'll be fine. I mean, it seemed like they put a lot of work into it. I just hope Phase 2 gets somewhat more interesting. Yeah, I think that's going to break the fight for me.
I think Phase 1 in particular, just like, again, they really, really need to fix the telegraphs when she's teleporting around. It's very confusing. Even if you have the weak aura, it just becomes a thing where instead of looking at the fight, you're looking at your weak auras to tell what's going on. And that's just a failure of design.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, which is like... I don't know. It's something that I think somebody made the point of, like, they've basically put in certain mechanics just from a lore perspective versus from a fight perspective. And that never seems to work out.
I think if they change the animation on Windrunner in particular, the thing where she does a lot of teleporting around.
Yeah.
I think that that mechanic is actually totally fine if they just change the animation and she stands still and there's like shadow forms that do the thing where she teleports around. So like shadow Sylvanas's appear all over and do the thing. Like,
yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah.
That fits the mechanic and also is not visually confusing.
Yeah. That makes sense. So but yeah, I mean that's a Sylvanas fight. A bunch of other I guess like mythic testing went on too.
Not a whole lot to report, honestly. Like I did all the bosses. Painsmith is a confusing boss. Again, better telegraphs. There's a little bit of wonkiness with spikes where if you're not standing in kind of the exact center of one of the squares, not literally the exact center, but it's relatively tight. If you're touching the edge of it, basically, it'll give you spikes as if you're standing in two different squares, which means you die. Because what normally happens is, so spikes come from the chains targets, but they don't appear underneath the chains targets.
Oh, okay.
So they don't get hit by them. But if they're standing too close to the edge of the square, then it treats it as if they are in both squares, and then they do get hit by it.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And that's extremely bad. So once we figured that out, things got much cleaner, but by that point we had like four Pug players in the group that weren't in voice and like kind of were screwing up the mechanics. So we saw the intermission like once or twice, I think, but they also fixed the thing where you could jump off the edge and have the spikes just not happen.
Oh.
If you do that, they appear on the entire platform and everyone dies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, fair enough. Don't do that. However, Prop Paladin, Spell Warding, and Bubble will prevent it.
Nice.
Possibly AMS didn't have a Blood Decay copied over ready to go to test it.
Gotcha. Cool. Awesome. Well, it sounds like a lot of the fights in general seem to enjoy them. However, I think with any raid, like, sort of make or break it by the end fight. So we'll see if they...
The end fight is what you spend usually the most time on. Castle Nathry was an exception with Stone Legion Generals being actually most raid groups' most time-intensive boss.
Yeah. So we'll see. I really hope they clean up that Phase 2 stuff. So so cool. So then now on to sort of our big topic and an hour into the... episode. So I want to talk a little bit about basically Burning Crusade. I know there's no monks in Burning Crusade, but to be fair, I'm really excited about it. So
it comes out 6 o'clock on Tuesday.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So Burning Crusade Classic launches on Tuesday this week, and I am super excited, actually. Weirdly excited for it because I just really want to play the game. Like, I don't, it wouldn't be my favorite expansion, I think, if we look at it across WoW. But in terms of, like, I think I've talked about this a little bit, in terms of, like, the game, Burning Crusade was where I was like, this is the type, this is the game I want to play basically forever, yeah. Right? Like, this is sort of my comfort pick. It's my comfort zone.
I've been leveling a Blood Elf Rogue and having a great time. Like, so highly recommend, this is Emilson's official recommendation for how to have a great time leveling in the Burning Crusade. Don't install any add-ons. Install a bag add-on, nothing else. No Questy, no Azeroth Autopilot, no like quest helper add-on at all. Read the fucking quests. They're not that long. They're very clear. And in the random, like, it's very infrequent that I have to actually go and look up on WoWhead where something is.
Yeah.
And just go do things. It's good.
Yeah. It was fun. It was super. Yeah, because I boosted a shaman with two of my friends, and it's funny the way that I don't know if I talked about this, but it's funny the way that you get almost lazy playing retail, versus playing like classic or any of the older games. Because like my one friend, he gets it. We played a ton back in the day. We love the game, and I have a friend who is fairly recent. I mean, he played with us in classic, but he really only plays retail, and he's like, why can I not run through 12 mobs and kill them all? Yeah, or like
die.
Or like do that. The other thing was like, he was like, why am I running out of mana? He was playing a warlock. I was like, did you get life tap? Are you draining the mobs? He's like, but I can't just cast Shadow Bolt. I'm like, it's not that type of game anymore. So, I mean, it was cool. And for me, I think the other part of it is BC, I think, fixed a lot of the issues that I had with classic looking back, which like, I think they made the leveling curve less, right? I think it's still difficult. I think you still have to put time in to hit max level, but I think that it's smooth a little, right? There's not
for those that aren't familiar with it, in patch 2.4, which is the last patch of the Burning Crusade, basically, they reduced the XP requirement across the board, basically, for levels 1 through 60 by 30%. And then so 60 to 70, I don't remember if they nerfed those or not, but it's 10 extra levels. It is not 30% of the leveling process right there.
Yeah.
So it actually did get slightly faster to hit level 70. And I actually think that the leveling rate that they ended on in Burning Crusade is extremely good, where like you spend a good chunk of time at each level, but it's not so long that you feel like you're never going to hit the next level.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think they did that part of it well. And then I think just in general, BC did a lot of things that I liked, right? Like I'm gonna be weird about this, but I liked attunements, right? Like I liked the idea that you had to unlock heroic modes of dungeons. And sort of those sort of like time commitments, right? Because it's funny, like a lot of people, I see some arguments about this where it's like they basically artificially elongated endgame, right? Because you had to put in a bunch of time, maybe in dungeons or doing things that don't matter to you, right? To get to the heroic stuff, which does matter to you, and then spend time in heroics to then eventually get to like the raids from like an attunement perspective. But I think to me, it's like that sort of like step progression is cool.
Also, only one person needs the key to get into a heroic dungeon, right? Everybody needs the key. Oh, okay. It's been a long time.
Same with attunements to raids. Like, if you want to go to Karen,
everybody needed the attunement. But I thought it was for dungeons, only one person needed the key. Maybe I'm just thinking of the like I did Sethek Halls a bajillion times for Anzu back in the day because I was a druid, and I mean, druids were the ones that could get you your Anzu. So I played a lot of Sethek Halls.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, that was the So I thought that was cool, and that's sort of like BC will be fun. From like a time perspective, it sucks. It's just a lot of time. Like I get that, but I think in terms of like the game, like the way the game was designed as a whole, I think was really cool.
Yeah, I think Burning Crusade for me is not a game about the end game, and that is when I was playing Burning Crusade. I like the only end game content I did was heroic dungeons in Karazhan. That's it. I didn't do anything, any 25 mans, none of that. Like the only thing I did on Sunwell Plateau was go and do whatever the dungeon there is called. I can't remember it now.
Magister's Terrace.
Yeah. Took me half a decade to get the mount from there. But yeah, this is still the era of WoW where it was not designed solely around the endgame. And then like other kinds of content like leveling were treated as actual parts of the game instead of like a speed bump.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I'm excited. I think for me, like I have like personal goals I want to accomplish, which aren't like racing to the end. Right. Like, I think it's like, I want to go back through and I want to do things differently. Cause I played Warlock through almost all of BC right at the time. And I think it, like, I'm going to do it this time as a shaman, particularly a healer. And I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be interesting to see like how to heal these dungeons, what's the differences, you know. It'll be fun to look at gear, like to basically look at gear and be like, damn, do I want this piece? Do I want this piece? Like, not know it, right? Because it's been so long.
Gear is, okay, so this is one thing. So I've been watching some of the Kevin Jordan videos, which you showed
me. Yeah.
So former WoW designer, worked on Classic, worked on Burning Crusade. And one of the critiques he leveled at retail WoW is the focus on eye level to the exclusion of other things, which I had already been kind of on the like eye level sucks train, because the stated intent of the developers of having like, you should always use the higher eye level thing, just like removes so much of the gearing. Like,
there's no space for like interesting things. Like, the idea, and this is like Ian, like, sorry, I cut you off.
Go ahead.
No, but I think the idea that, like, to Ian's point, like, Ian made the point one, and I agree to an extent of this, which is like, Ian made the point of saying, like, if you get an item that is higher item level, you should equip it. It should just be underlying should be better. Like, there shouldn't be some sort of convoluted extra tool or system you have to use to say, is this actually better or not?
Yeah.
Which I think I kind of agree with that. Like, I kind of agree with that point. At the same time, to your point, it removes the choice. Like, it's like, I just need to get the 233 weapon. I don't give a crap what's on it.
Right? I think that he's got the right intent, which is that you shouldn't need an external tool. And I agree with that. I think SimCraft is bad for the game. It's extremely useful. I'm still going to contribute to it. I think it's bad for the game.
Yeah.
Eye level is the wrong solution to the problem of SimCraft existing.
Yeah.
Like, people, I should be able to pen and paper figure out which item is better. Like, I got a PhD in maths, basically. And I should be able to pen and paper, take it out, run the numbers, figure out which item is better. I cannot do that in retail WoW. I can do that in Classic.
Yeah. Yeah, which, and I, and even then, like, I don't, I would almost state that, like, knowing what is quote unquote better, like, is almost, maybe the world's in a different state, right? We're much more connected than we were at BC. Like, from just a, like, in general, people, you know, are going to post things, they're going to put together, hey, here's your best in slot list and stuff like that.
Right.
But I think to me, it's still the other side of retail is that there's not a lot of gear, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the thing, is like, there's not a lot of gear and you get a lot of gear. So like, the idea is like, there's not a ton of dungeons to run, so you're not going to see a bunch of items there. And also, entry level rating is so easy that like, dungeons generally don't matter that much, right? Outside of trinkets.
There's also the thing that like, I've been leveling a priest this weekend on retail, and I have, I think, 4 copies of the same weapon, just at different eye levels from throughout the leveling process. Like, I got the eye level 98 one from when I was level 50. I've got the eye level 114 from when I was 52. Then I got the eye level 122 from when I was 56. And now I've got the eye level 134 for being level 58. And it's like, if you want me to care about items again, this is not how you do it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's the one cool thing about this is like, there's a bunch of cool items again to rediscover in terms of like dungeon stuff and then like the raids, and then also, like, gems are back. I think gems were really cool. I think you figured out which one's the best anyway. Like, there's a way to do that. But the idea of, like, slotting colored gems into your gear is just fun.
Yeah, but then that adds an extra dimension of, like, yes, you can just throw SimCraft at it. But, like, or SimCraft doesn't exist for the Burning Crusade. But you know what I mean. You can throw a spreadsheet at it. But it adds this extra dimension of, is this, like, you have to think about your gear. Is this thing actually an upgrade? Because it means I have to break my meta.
Yeah, you know. Do I have enough gems for like my meta gem? Yeah. Yeah, which is, so, I again, like, that's colored. Like, why'd they get rid of that? I don't know.
Because it was complicated. Because it was complicated. That's ultimately it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, I don't know. I'm interested about that. I mean, like, from a from just a fun perspective, going back through sort of slowly doing it. Like, I have no desire to rush this. Like, this will probably be something that I do.
That's why my rogue is level 25. Like I said, no quest add-ons, just go and play the game. Like, I'm planning to take some time this afternoon and level fishing to get some items so I can continue leveling alchemy. Like, I am in no rush to hit level 70. I will eventually get there. I will do some dungeons. I will do Karazhan. I will probably never touch a raid. Never touch a raid again.
So that's the only issue for me, is like, the one goal is I would like to kill Kale again. Like, for me, that's like...
What server are you on?
I'm on Azur Song. I went with like Tally's guild has a kid started guild.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, because I know a guy, but he's on Herod, so...
Gotcha. Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, which, I think...
I'm on a PvP server now. Oh my God.
That's something I didn't want to do. Yeah, it's not something I was ready for. To do PvP stuff, but yeah, so to kill Kale, I think, is the one goal that I have, and then we'll see from there. But if I can do that, at least I'll consider BC a success for me. Because I don't know, that fight is still one of the, like, it's a fan service fight. It's not very difficult, but at the time, it was so interesting in terms of like having to move different mobs around. Like, the weapons and the intermission were cool. You know, making sure like you equip something in the middle, and then like I'd like to make sure the macro was right on my Shadow Bolt so that I was still casting the staff every once in a while. I was responsible for attacking one of the the caster mobs, so I had to make sure I got aggro on her and pulled her all the way to the back. And so there's a bunch of different things that would happen around it that I thought was so cool. So that fight, hopefully we get to do the room changes. So I don't know. Gosh. Yeah, I'm excited to try and do that like at level, and then but yeah, I think from there we'll see. But yeah, I'm super excited about BC. I think it's second, probably. I mean, if I had to actually rank them, probably my second favorite expansion, or even second favorite era of WoW to me, I'd say. So
I would say BC is my favorite, and probably this, because I didn't really play MOP, I didn't really play WoD, I didn't raid at all until Legion. So
yeah,
I can't, like, I've heard that the raids in MOP and WoD are amazing, and like, great, I didn't do them.
Yeah.
So probably my second would be Legion.
Yeah, I mean, Legion's still really good.
Back into the game in a big way. And like, Legion's great, but Burning Crusade, like, I don't know if you remember the way that leveling was at Legion launch, like pre-100, I guess pre-WOD, basically. You didn't need anything special to just one-shot everything in your path.
Yeah.
Like, I level the rogue, and you just like ambush stealth stealth with quest greens.
Yeah,
it was bad.
It was not good. But I mean, yeah, it'll be fun to see how the rest of how BC sort of plays out, how where Blizzard takes it from here, right? Like, does Blizzard then go into Wrath? Which, I mean,
Have you been on the Classic Era servers at all?
No, I have not. Are they dead?
I somewhat foolishly left my druid on Classic Era, and now I'm kind of regretting it. Although it's the wrong faction anyway, so maybe I just buy the deluxe thing and get the boost and use that on a horde side druid, because that's what my friends are playing now. But there's not a lot of people there.
No.
There's not a lot of people left.
No, and I think,
and I mean, once they consolidate the Classic Era servers, I think it'll be a lot better, because there's definitely, I feel like, enough people for there to be a like 1 to 2 very strong high pop Classic Era servers. But
yeah,
right now there's not, like, everybody's spread across the like 20 servers that they had.
Yeah, and I think that was my idea too, is that like, they would just be empty. Like, people just move on to the new thing. So,
yeah. But I kind of wanted to finish leveling on my druid in Classic. And also, I knew that so it's a Night Elf druid, right? And we're playing Horde in Burning Crusade with people from my guild. So even if I copied it to Classic, it would be wrong server, or copied it to BC, it would be wrong server, wrong faction.
Yeah. So wouldn't be worth it anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. But cool, yeah. I mean, that's the BC stuff. It'll be fun to go back through it. Maybe we do another bear mount run, get some bear mounts going. It's the best mount in the game. So, But yeah, that is BC. So any other things you wanted to cover for this week or any other topics?
No. I'm excited for BC. I'm really excited for it. But then again, they basically released the part of the game that I wanted like 2 weeks ago with pre-patch the Blood Elf starting area and Night Elf and Draenei starting area. So
gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, nice. Awesome. All righty. Well then, we're at kind of a little bit of a time crunch, so we're probably going to skip the lore corner this week. I think next week we'll talk a little bit more.
We spent too much time on
MDI, Great Push. Yeah. Sorry, yeah, for sure. So we are going to just jump right into Q&A. As always, for question and answers, you can send your questions to Emilson or myself. We will answer them on the show, basically about any topic. I would say that literally 95% of our questions are non-WoW related questions, and the trend sort of continues this week. But yeah, send us your questions. We'll answer them on the podcast. We'll give you a shout out in Discord because we love you. And we'll answer pretty much anything. We do have limits, though. So first up, we have a question from Kate. And Kate asks, if you could be any monk in the Peak of Serenity, who would you be and why? And then for whatever reason, they put these sort of restrictions and say, no Chen, Taran, etc.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that means, because to be fair, I only know about Chen, Taran, and Lili. So I'm screwed. So I guess I get to pick Lili.
Who else can I pick?
Yeah, I mean, so I will say that there actually, you know what? I don't know if this monk is not in the Peak of Serenity, but there is a monk quest giver in Jade Forest, in the main town there, that gives you, it's the quest where you basically, he's the bartender, and you drink with him and you pass out in one of the quests and like wake up and then all of a sudden there's a fight going on or something like that.
Yeah,
I want to be the bartender monk. Like, that's who I want to be. Just getting all the adventurers coming in, we'll drink, we'll have a good time, we'll talk about stuff. I don't know their name, I don't know if it's a guy or a girl, I don't know anything about that, but I want to be the bartender monk. Not in the Peak of Serenity, literally. Kate, sorry, I didn't even answer your question.
Do you remember the third boss in the monastery dungeon in MoP? Second or third boss?
Okay.
You're fighting a panda monk.
Oh yeah.
And I don't even remember all the mechanics, but you know the one I'm talking about. You're like fighting him one on one.
Like in a little dojo game. And he like splits.
Yeah, in the dojo. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, that one. I guess that guy.
Okay.
That guy's neat.
He's got he can make like teleport or like phantasma things of himself that still have the same abilities.
Also officially stronger than any player monk, because if you try and 1v1 him, he will win at level.
Oh, interesting. That's true. Okay, that's fair. That's a good choice too. I like that. Well, Kate, thank you for, I don't think we answered your question, but thank you for it. As you can see, Emilson and I really strong on our monk lore. So know all of the monk names. The third boss or second boss in monastery? Is it monastery? Not, or
it's temple.
Whatever. I know what you're talking about. Anyway.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, though.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you very much for the question. Next up, we have a two. I'm gonna combine these questions. So we've got one question from Peo, and then we have a follow on from Gammy Gang, in Peak. All right. So Peo's question is best spear ? Okay, it's fair, best beer. And then Gammy Gang follows it up with, what's the best gin flavor? So
Gammy Gang, for reference, is Puro from Brew Lounge.
Okay, Puro, got it. Okay, Puro, name changes, whatever. So first of all, I'm going to take the second half of this. What's the best gin flavor? I didn't realize gin had flavors. So I can go with, we have Bombay Sapphire in my liquor cabinet, but my wife drinks. So that's the best flavor. I don't drink gin, so that's the best flavor of gin.
I don't really have any experience with gin either, so I can't answer that question. I've actually never had gin. I will say something that I tried very recently that I've been a huge fan of, apple brandy. Very
good. Oh, okay. Very interesting. Good. Very good. Interesting. All right. Well, okay, Perot, as you can see, we're huge alcoholics here. I don't realize there was flavors, but we're going to go with Bombay Sapphire. I think it's a group. We'll make that a group answer.
Okay.
And then Peo with the best beer. So I don't drink that much beer anymore, I will tell you.
Okay,
well, why don't you go first? So what's your opinion?
Okay, the best beer? So these are all going to be local craft brews.
Okay.
There's one, and I'm blanking on the name. It's a Christmas seasonal beer that is produced by a local brewery here, West Six Brewing. Okay. That is amazing. You can only get it around Christmas time. I love it. And I wish I had stocked up on a couple of six packs of it before it went out of season. Real unfortunate. It's like a dark chocolatey hazelnutty beer. Oh, hazelnut stout. That's what it is. Hazelnut stout. Okay. And then number two would be Cottonmouth from, oh my God. It's a brewery in Gainesville, Florida. I don't remember. There's two breweries and I can't remember which one it was, but it got discontinued because apparently it wasn't popular enough.
Okay.
Which is real sad because I loved it and gotcha. You can't get it anymore.
Interesting. All right. So I am. Okay. So local. So I'll go with maybe one that's a little bit. So I'm a huge fan of German beers in general when I did drink beer. So I like wheat beers.
Yeah.
So Weihenstephaner, which is a brewery in outside of Munich. I think they're considered the oldest brewery in the world. They sort of have tried to take that moniker. They make a Hefeweizen. Which is a wheat-based beer. It's very, very good. So that's sort of my favorite beer, at least something that maybe you can get locally.
So for one that is also one that you can actually get in more parts of the world than literally Lexington, Kentucky, or literally nowhere because they don't make it anymore.
Yeah.
I have actually never had a Hofbräu beer that I didn't like.
Okay.
There's a Hofbräu house in Cincinnati, Ohio. That is a fun time if you ever are in the area and want to check that out. But you can get Hofbräu stuff, you know, all over the place. And their Oktoberfest beer is very good.
Yes. In general, Oktoberfest beers are normally really good. And I think it's particularly if you're actually in Munich during that time, because it's literally like they try and make the highest concert, like the highest ABV value or alcohol. What is it? By volume value in those beers. So they're normally like... They're only like 7-8%. They taste delicious. In any event, yeah, Weihenstephaner is probably my favorite beer. But Hefeweizens in general are something I drink. It's my thing. When I used to drink beer, now it just makes me sleepy and tired and I feel gross. So
yeah, I stopped drinking beer as much. Not really intentionally, but I don't know. I kind of moved on to kind of doing mixed drinks. That kind of thing. And I don't really do any serious mixed drinks. Like, one of the things I actually like about the apple brandy is you don't need to mix it. It's just good on its own. But it's also, I don't know, whenever I drink beer, I feel like, it's like so many calories. Like, when I drink it with a meal, I feel like super over full.
Yeah.
No, I get that feeling when I have, you know, some brandy. Or like rum and coke, or do like a mojito kind of thing. My mixed drink repertoire is very narrow, and it's basically lime based, rum based mixed drinks. So
that is awesome. That's like me, and like I drink a lot of whiskey, but if I'm not doing that, it's literally High Noons or White Claws.
Yeah.
Like. I have no shame. I will drink a White Claw. I'll drink a High Noon. I'll drink those sort of like seltzery alcoholic things. Huge fan.
Yeah.
But cool. But Peo kind of rhymes. Thank you for the alcohol related questions today. And our final question of the day comes from our friend Abelito 75. They ask, if you had to be any mod in Peak, why would it be me? Okay, so first off, it would not be you. All right.
Second off, I am a mod in Peak, so I already am.
Is a mod. Yeah, and I think the other thing is like I don't actually know who the mods in Peak are because I don't look down that far. You know, I mean, it's when you're an admin and you're just up here in the clouds. Like you don't worry about what people digging in the dirt are doing, right? Like you're worrying about the sunrise coming up. So that's my answer to that. God, I just pissed off every Mon Peak.
Damn.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, man.
I'm just kidding. Abbe, it was just a joke. I would definitely not want to be you, though. Sounds awful. Everybody makes fun of you.
Oh, that is true. People be nice. Please be nice to Abe. He does a lot of work for us.
He does. Actually, he's a, yeah, he's a good dude at the end of the day. I don't always like him, but he's a good dude.
Well, you can say that about most people.
Are you sure I'm like a cranky old man, Emerson? I don't like everybody?
No, I'm saying that I don't think there's a single person that I would say I always like them.
I always like you.
I appreciate that. I'm not returning the favor.
Oh, God. Fair enough. I think that's it for questions. We don't have any more questions. I think this is the last podcast episode ever after that.
Oh, man.
Oh, I'm kidding.
That's okay. Thank you all for listening to this, the 70th episode of the Peak Israeli podcast. If you enjoyed it, please feel free to share it. Come and hang out in Peak. Say hi. I always appreciate when I get an at or a DM, you know, saying, hey, I listened to the podcast. I really enjoyed it. And include a question, because we do answer those here on the podcast on air. And of course, if you did enjoy it and you want to support the work that we do on the podcast and on the Peak of Serenity, as far as working on Sims and working on guides and all of that fun stuff, you can do that over on our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. But that is going to be it for our show this week. I am going to go and watch more of The Great Push. And we will be back next week, same time, same place. And we will hopefully see you then.
Of course. Bye.
Bye.